Wisdom shouts in the streets. She cries out in the public square. She calls to the crowds along the main street, to those gathered in front of the city gate. How long, you simpletons, will you insist on being simple-minded? How long will you mockers relish your mocking? How long will you fools hate knowledge? Come and listen to my counsel. I'll share my heart with you and make you wise. I called you so often, but you wouldn't come. I reached out to you, but you paid no attention. You ignored my advice and rejected the correction I offered. So I will laugh when you are in trouble. I will mock you when disaster overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster engulfs you like a cyclone, and anguish and distress overwhelm you. When they cry for help, I will not answer. Though they anxiously search for me, they will not find me. For they hated knowledge and chose not to fear the Lord. They rejected my advice and paid no attention when I corrected them. Therefore, they must eat the bitter fruit of living their own way, choking on their own schemes. For simpletons turn away from me to death. Fools are destroyed by their own complacency. But all who listen to me will live in peace, untroubled by fear of harm. My child, listen to what I say and treasure my commands. Tune your ears to wisdom and concentrate on understanding. Cry out for insight and ask for understanding. Search for them as you would for silver. Seek them like hidden treasures. Then you will understand what it means to fear the Lord, and you will gain knowledge of God. For the Lord grants wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He grants a treasure of common sense to the honest. He is a shield to those who walk with integrity. He guards the paths of the just and protects those who are faithful to him. Then you will understand what is right, just, and fair, and you will find the right way to go. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will fill you with joy. Wise choices will watch over you. Understanding will keep you safe. Wisdom will save you from evil people, from those whose words are twisted. These men turn from the right way to walk down dark paths. They take pleasure in doing wrong, and they enjoy the twisted ways of evil. Their actions are crooked, and their ways are wrong. Wisdom will save you from the immoral woman, from the seductive words of the promiscuous woman. She has abandoned her husband and ignores the covenant she made before God. Entering her house leads to death. It is the road to the grave. The man who visits her is doomed. He will never reach the paths of life. So follow the steps of the good and stay on the paths of the righteous. For only the godly will live in the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be removed from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted. This is God's word.
Thank you, Garrett. Give me a minute. Gotta get all these papers organized up here. Well, hello.
Hi, Lonnie.
Hi, Roland. Thanks for everything you did there with the kids, and thanks to my good friend, my favorite friend, Mike, and Cruz, and Ray. Thank you all for welcoming me here today. Listen, would you join with me as we, as I say what we say every day, but I want you to join in this part. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. After last week's sermon by Pastor Treehugger, I was very selective on where the shirt I am wearing today was manufactured. The shirt I had on last week, I checked, was made in Indonesia, quite likely in a sweatshop. I decided to do better this week and am sporting a Made in America shirt. Instead of feeling like I don't care about the exploitation of children, I get to feel like a proud nationalist.
Much better, don't you think? Timothy Keller, in the introduction to his devotional on Proverbs, titled God's Wisdom for Navigating Life, makes these two statements. A proverb is a poetic art form that instills wisdom in you as you wrestle with it. And one of the main messages of Proverbs is you've never really thought enough about anything. These two statements got my attention. The idea of taking the time to truly understand something doesn't really fit into our instant gratification culture. In last week's staff meeting, Andy said this: our culture wants to take small sound bites and react rather than wrestle. We see this mindset in action when we go to purchase a car. We really don't want to do the work of reading the contract. So fortunately for us, the finance guy, he highlights everywhere we need to sign an initial. And away we go. We just sign ourselves into debt without really knowing what we're signing. Well, sometimes we approach our relationship with God that way. We want the preacher, the video, the podcast to highlight all the God stuff they think we need to know, rather than doing the hard work of digging into the text ourselves. Paul mentioned this in Acts 17:11, where he said, "Now the Berean Jews were of more noble character than those in Thessalonica, for they received the message with great eagerness and examined the scriptures every day to see if what Paul said was true." The Bereans did the work. I don't. You know, whatever Andy preaches on Sunday, I pretty much just accept it as true. But Paul is challenging us to go and verify that. Oh, do I trust Andy? Yeah. Do you remember what Jefferson said last week? Trust and verify. So, today's text begins with Lady Wisdom and three fools. Two of the fools have different names, but they are fools nonetheless. Andy, in the introduction to Proverbs, told us that the word for wisdom is Sophia, which is feminine, and that's why we have Lady Wisdom. And wisdom is personified as Lady Wisdom, but she is much more than a dispenser of wise sayings that we can turn into bumper stickers and refrigerator magnets. Lady Wisdom deals in truth, morality, and the true nature of reality. So wisdom shouts in the streets. She cries out in the public square. She calls to the crowds along the main street, to those gathered in front of the city gate. "How long, you simpletons, will you insist on being simple-minded? How long will you mockers relish in your mocking? How long will you fools hate knowledge?" It is apparent that Lady Wisdom is covering all the spots: the streets, the public squares, the city gates, the seat of government, the place of commerce, and where people just hang out. The question, "How long?" suggests that she's been at it for a while, calling for an extended time to ensure that no one can say, "You never called out to me." Who are the three fools in Western culture? We have the naive simpleton. Decades ago, I'm old enough to remember decades ago, higher education stopped teaching critical thinking and started homogenizing their students to understand life through the singular perspective of their professors' biases. By the way, religious institutions are not exempt from this. We have a friend who wasn't intellectually engaged when she was in university. She received an assignment to write a book report on Leo Tolstoy's novel, War and Peace. It's interesting as we think about the naive simpleton that his main fictional protagonist was described as an intelligent but naive man. Simpletons are not necessarily unintelligent. They are intellectually passive and easily shaped. Now, our friend did not read the book or the Cliff Notes, and Google didn't exist. So she naively submitted her book report on a man named War and Peace. Oops. Simpletons don't like to do the work of critical thinking, which leads them to be prone to high suggestibility and a preference for easy answers over complex truths. They aren't trying to be agents of false information. They just simply believe every clickbait and every incomplete headline they see in social media without getting the whole story. Here's an example. A simple person could run around telling people that President Trump resigned because they saw a classic clickbait partial headline that read, President Trump has decided to re-dash. They do this in headlines all the time. They're trying to lead you somewhere else so that you click to figure it out. But if she would have clicked or he would have clicked on this, they would have seen that President Trump has decided to rescind America's membership in the Paris Agreement. We have to do the work. Naive people believe all things are believable, especially if they have been fact-checked. I came across a review that fact-checked the trustworthiness and accuracy of the fact-checkers. Yes, even they have biases. Trustpilot does not necessarily mean it's accurate. The simple or willfully uninformed consumers of culture who drift with trends rather than testing them. They are frequently undecided, but they don't realize their indecision is a decision. And they are often one influence away from ruin. As believers, they are spiritually open but unanchored. Christians who know feelings but not theology. Verses but not doctrine. If we are honest with ourselves, we have all been willful simpletons at times. Maybe it's been a while. Maybe it was relatively recent. Maybe we are in the deep water right now. When life becomes stressful due to relationship issues, financial struggles, outside influences, dealing with past and present pain, there is a strong pull to shut down emotionally, intellectually, relationally, and spiritually. The voice of wisdom gets drowned out by the lie that withdrawing will bring peace, when in reality, it leads to despair, disappointment, and depression. In these moments, it is easy to put on our water wings and happily disengage while floating down the river of someone else's thoughts, convictions, and leanings, blissfully unaware that there is a class 5 rapids ahead. How long will you mockers relish your mocking? Mockers are fully capable of engaging in meaningful, informed conversations, but they choose not to because they are adverse to taking anything seriously. I lived my life in this spot for quite a long time. This is because they believe all humanity is based on selfishness, and you can't trust anyone's motives. They actively avoid being lured into what they view as meaningless relationships, conversations, and groups. When with real human beings, their defense is to actively use irony and sarcasms to put others off so they can sit in their unseriousness. When respect is demanded, they will exhibit the cool, too cool to care attitude. When presented with new ideas, they respond with knee-jerk skepticism or intellectual arrogance to put down or diminish the idea's validity. They get juiced on being seen as professional contrarians to be avoided. They are online trolls who hide behind manipulated identities, feeding their false sense of superiority by posting hot takes or controversial statements, by derailing conversations, by using off-topic comments to steer meaningful discussions into chaos. Even while using a false identity, they pretend to share a chat group's goals, while under a different identity, they subtly post concerns intended to sow doubt and undermine the group's efforts. They value making others look wrong more than they value learning. As believers, they find pious ways to engage in their mocking. They will drop Bible references that are out of context to disrupt the discussion. They innocently play the devil's advocate for the purpose of appearing theologically superior rather than to draw out deeper truths. And even when praying with people who need hope, they may suggest that God's plan for you is to be in the desert a while. Sadly, many mockers hold a low view of themselves. And this behavior is their armor. Their safe mode is being the foolish mocker who builds their self-esteem by tearing others down. Sometimes being a cynic feels right. Currently, I am pretty cynical about our federal government. Have been for more than a decade. It feels like they've earned my cynicism. Is there a time for righteous cynicism? I'll let you wrestle with that question on your own time. One thing for sure is there's no room for cynicism regarding the government of King Jesus. As we learned last week, he is always just. He always cares. And he cares about everything. The obstinate fool. How long will you fools hate knowledge? In this context, fools are those who have seen the consequences of poor choices, but obstinately stays on the same path, actively avoiding the process of learning. The quote, insanity is doing the same thing over again and expecting different results, is the obstinate fool's home turf, as they are dedicated repeat offenders. Remember the frog in the pot who gets boiled alive? Anybody? You know that story? Yeah. Well, in this case, this frog is ambidextrous because he reaches outside the pot. And he's the one that's turning the heat up on himself. It's what the obstinate fool does. Yes. They set a trap for themselves. And they sabotage themselves. It isn't that fools are missing information. It's that they are hostile towards information that requires change. They repeatedly choose destructive paths despite clear consequences. They can become emotionally volatile when corrected because they are right, no matter what the statistics say. They have a deep-seated commitment to the status quo, and they are behaviorally stagnant. In truth, each of us has a preferred place, and we often take the path that leads towards our comfort zone and away from doing the hard work of learning. I'm aware that there are those of you here today that absolutely thrive on learning. So doing the hard work for you may look like setting aside your book and meeting someone for coffee. This week, our Surge Table, which is a group that we're part of, fasted for 24 hours. That was the subject matter. Starting Tuesday evening, and then when we met on Wednesday evening, we broke our fast over spaghetti, salad, fresh baked sourdough bread, and amazing cookies. People were hungry, some bordering on hangry. Yes, and I wasn't sure. Sorry, got ahead of myself. And everyone was ready to eat. But there were some folks that were running a little late. And I said we should wait and break our fast together. There were rumors of a mutiny. There were some unhappy people. But wait, we did. And 25 minutes later, all were present. And the blessing was the shortest blessing I think I've ever heard. Thank you, God. Let's eat, I believe, was the prayer. During this time, we got a very, very, very small taste of what hunger feels like compared to so much of the world. After eating, we discussed other things we as Americans like to consume and if we should fast from them at times. It was a difficult topic, and honestly, I sensed in myself and in our group some resistance. It is in these moments we get to decide, will I engage with one or more of the three fools, or will I engage with Lady Wisdom. Fortunately for us, Sophia continues to extend a lifeline to the three fools. "Come and listen to my counsel," she says. "I'll share my heart with you and make you wise." If the three fools don't listen now, they will be stuck in an endless doom loop. Here's how it works. The fool uses the simpleton's silence as proof that change isn't needed, and the mocker's cynicism as an excuse to ignore good advice. The mocker creates an environment of fear through sarcasm. And the simpleton, fearing the mocker's sting, stops asking questions and simply follows the path of least resistance. And the cycle just repeats and repeats and repeats. No one listens. No one learns. No one changes. Speaking of changes, the tone of Proverbs now takes on a different voice. "I called you so often, but you wouldn't come. I reached out to you, but you paid no attention. You ignored my advice and rejected the correction I offered. When they cry for help, I will not answer. Though they anxiously search for me, they will not find me." Cruz is coming up to share a story from his childhood. When he is finished, I want us to dialogue over this question. Coming up, Cruz.
Yeah, while in our sermon planning meeting this week, we were reading through the scriptures and found ourselves asking the question, what does it mean to hear and respond to the voice of God? And while we were talking, I was reminded of an old story of mine that I told to the guys. It's a story of when I remember hearing my parents call it to me and how I received it. So that's what I'm going to share with you all now. One summer when I was around 5, I was playing outside in the backyard, probably pretending I was Spider-Man and shooting webs out of my hands or something. And so, when I had the idea, I was going to play hide-and-seek with my parents. Except they weren't clued in that we were going to be playing hide-and-seek. I was just going to hide, and I was going to see if they could find me. And it went about just exactly how you'd imagined it would. I went and hid in our backyard, and we had this old wooden shed down the back of the house where we'd hold our bikes and our tools. And so I crawled in there because I thought it was the best place to hide, and I tucked myself into a corner with the shed door just slightly cracked so I could see out if anyone was walking by to try to find me. And some time passed, and it came time for me to come inside. And so I hear my mom open the back door, and I hear her come looking for me. She's calling out for me in an Australian accent. "Cruz, Cruz, like, where are you? Come inside. Dinner's ready." And committed to hiding, I tucked into the shed even further. And I ignored her voice calling out to me. And after some time, I hear the door close. And what I assume is I hear her go inside and continue looking for me. And after she couldn't find me, the door opens back up again. I hear her call out for me again. But in this time, the voice is much more urgent and far more worried. And through the crack, I see her walking around the backyard looking for me. And I tuck in even deeper and still committed to hiding at this point. Part of me even felt good about it, I'll admit. I felt like I was really good at hiding. Like, I pulled one over even on my mom in hiding. I felt kind of proud of myself in it. And some more time passes, and I hear the back door close again. My mom goes back inside. I still hear some footsteps walking around outside the shed, and so I don't move an inch because I'm too smart for my own good, and I think I'm a pro hide-and-seek player, and and just as I'm thinking that, a little snout pops in the crack, and it's our dog, Maya, and she's sniffing me and found me without any trouble. And she starts scratching the shed to get in, and so I'm trying to shoo her away, and I'm trying to not get my hiding spot blown. And I'm almost pleading with her. I'm trying to reason with her like she's a real person. I'm like, Maya, no, it's okay. We're playing hide and seek. You're about to ruin the game. And as I'm pleading with Maya, this time I hear the back door boom open. And this time my dad comes out. And my mom must have told him that she couldn't find me anywhere. And after turning over the house together, he comes out and he's upset. He yells out, Cruz, come out here right now. Quit playing around. And if you know my dad, it's pretty scary. And he's stomping all over the yard and he's turning things over aggressively. And Maya, wanting nothing to do with my angry dad, bounds off back inside. And I'm glued to this corner of the shed at this point. And I'm scared and I'm not thinking about how impressive I am anymore. I'm just thinking about how scared I am and how if I get found now, I'm in big trouble. So I stay hidden until I hear my dad go back inside this time. Now young Cruz is faced with a dilemma. Do I keep hiding or do I go face my parents and get in trouble? And after a few minutes of deliberation, I decided I'd probably get in less trouble if I turned myself in now rather than later. And so out of self-preservation, I come out of the shed and I go inside to find my parents and turn myself in. And they're out in the front yard, and they have a gathering of neighbors where they're about to send a search party to go find me in the neighborhood. And here I come walking out the front door. And the first person I'm faced with is my dad. And he immediately grabs me, and he's furious. And he asks, where have you been? And I tell him I was playing in the backyard, and I was hiding in the shed to see if they could find me, and I really didn't mean to cause any trouble, but I was just trying to have some fun. And as I'm explaining myself, my dad just stops me and just wraps me in a big hug. And he just says, gritting his teeth, he just says, don't ever do that again. And I ended up not getting in trouble. And so why do I tell you this story? I think hearing the voice of God or the voice of wisdom can be a similar experience. While I'm not trying to give you a laundry list of answers to this, I think the tone of voice that's calling out to us can sometimes be heard differently. It can be heard to sound angry. It can be heard as soft or worried or joyful. I think our responses can be a myriad of different things. We can be proud of ourselves, ashamed. We can be scared, or we can be excited. I think just about every time we can be surprised, though, by how we're received. How we're received by something that we could never have expected, but is just simply the grace of God, right? And in the spirit of the Wisdom series, I'll leave you with some questions to consider. How can we discern the true voice of wisdom in an age of noise, where each voice is proclaiming it's the voice of wisdom? And what is our internal response saying to the voice of wisdom? And does it need to be challenged? Thank you.
Thank you. I think you took the rest of the sermon. No? Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Cruz. So, on the end of this, sorry, I know better than doing yes or no questions. On the end of this, there should be a why. A why. So, what do you think? Anybody have a response to this? Are there ever extenuating reasons that would justify not responding to wisdom's call? And why?
No, I mean by extenuating reasons.
That's the why.
No.
Peter says, hard no.
Yes.
Cruz is a soft yes.
Hard yes.
A hard yes. Why? No one's saying why yet.
It doesn't align with our belief system.
It doesn't align
with our belief system.
With our belief system? Oh, you're giving a reason.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But then it wouldn't be wisdom.
Peter says it wouldn't be wisdom then. Yeah. God's wisdom. Yes. No. So we got a no from Kelly.
Yes.
To Matt?
I don't know if it's wisdom. My thought was if you were to see maybe a child playing in the street, you run to get them, you know it's not good to be in the street because you'll get hit by a car. But I don't know if that's wisdom or knowledge. And then wisdom is saying to rescue the child.
Good point. I like it. That's kind of what Cruz's dad was feeling, right, when he walked out the front door. Well, I don't know that there's legitimate reasons for not listening to sage advice, but I do think there are reasons that are not based in stubbornness. Let's recognize this, but not take up residence in this space. We may resist advice because it contradicts what we were taught to believe. How about this? Maybe someone tells you that a word you were taught was a swear word. That you were, sorry, I lost my spot here, was a swear word. And that, let me start over again. Maybe someone tells you that a word you were taught was swearing is permissible to use because it more faithfully frames what you are trying to convey. Wow. For some people, past experiences have resulted in making change so uncomfortable, they avoid advice to the contrary. How about we don't trust the source of advice and consequently dismiss it? Kelly, when you asked your question, I wondered, can good advice ever come from an untrustworthy source? Emotional attachments often create biases that cloud our judgment. Say you have a good friend, and someone says, you need to break off that relationship because at this time it's detrimental to your emotional health. There certainly are reasons why we reject sound advice. So I will laugh when you are in trouble. I will mock when disaster overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster engulfs you like a cyclone, and anguish and distress overwhelms you. This sounds more devilish than godlike. It feels like God is enjoying our calamity. Not a very comforting thought. Do you think God's mocking equates to the mocking of the fool? Why? Any thoughts?
I'm guessing if God's mocking, it probably is a pretty good reason to mock. Yeah, I'm guessing by a fool means you're probably being pretty foolish and mocking, so probably no.
Doesn't equate.
Because you reap what you sow. And if that's the reward, play dumb games, win stupid prizes. Yeah. I'm a living example.
1 John 4. It's the chapter we don't have.
No, only God has the perfect perspective, authority, power, wisdom to. He can basically do things that we can't because he's God and he can do it perfectly, whereas we're going to screw up.
I think that
God's mocking being more directed towards the action and the fool's mocking is to dehumanize and demonize the person.
Yeah. Good answers. When we laugh at someone, we're laughing typically at their misfortune. It typically involves making fun of them. It's sort of like trying to instruct someone how to learn to parallel park. And you suggest that you go after hours to the Walmart parking lot and you can learn there. And they say, oh, no, I'm good enough. Let's go learn downtown. So downtown you head. Secure in the knowledge that this is not going to end how they expect. After multiple attempts, people are yelling and gesturing. Horns are honking, and it's total chaos. By now, you are laughing at your student's predicament and the look of horror on their face. But this is not God's laugh. If he's the instructor, he is laughing that the obstinate only learn after they suffer the consequences of rejecting sound advice. God is not reveling in their destruction, but his laugh does emphasize how ludicrous it is to plant corn and expect watermelon. When they cry for help, I will not answer. Though they anxiously search for me, they will not find me. At first glance, it seems like we have run into a contradictory statement. Almost like a pretense, post-tense scenario. But that is not the case. Earlier, Lady Wisdom is shouting and calling out to the fools, inviting them to hear her advice and direction. Now they are calling out to her, and she's ghosting them. Does she want them to understand wisdom or not? Again, during our staff meeting discussion, Andy chimed in, just because someone ignores you does not mean they don't love you. Some actions are enabling, and you need to be inactive. When I was younger, I know when you look up here and you see my little cherub face that you think I've been this way my entire life. But I had a period of time where I was on the wrong side of the law and the wrong side of the fence, if you know what I mean. Well, one time I had a warrant out for my arrest, and I headed way up to a far corner in Washington that was a dead-end road. It ended up against an Indian reservation that the only access was via boat. And it was a good place to hide out. And I got a job there. That was how I ended up there. I heard about a job that was right along my line. It was construction. They gave you room and board and drugs. No money exchanged hands. It's a perfect setup. Well, when the job ended, I had to find my way out of there. And let me tell you, that was a difficult thing on my thumb on roads with nobody there. But I eventually got out to a freeway and hitchhiked down to Eugene, Oregon, where I called Missy. Thought I'd check in with my girlfriend who hadn't heard from me for quite a while. And she said, oh, I told her, hey, I'm headed down to New Orleans. Going to meet some folks down there in Jackson Square. And she says, well, why don't you come over here for a couple of days and see me before you head out? And I said, well, that sounds like a good idea. So I hitchhiked over the mountain and I get there. And as I would expect of Missy, she says, maybe you should call your parents. They're worried about you. So I call my dad up, and my dad says, my dad's a very giving, generous man, and he says, hey, why don't you come out to the job site on Monday, work for a couple of days, I'll just give you some cash, it'll get you down the road on your way to New Orleans. And I said, great, Dad, see you on Monday. So I show up to work on Monday, I don't know, 7:30 or something. And right around 9 o'clock, that time is more embedded in my brain than when we started. And right around 9 o'clock, woo, 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 all these police cars descended on the construction site. Yes, my dad had informed them where I would be. I wasn't too happy with him at that moment in time. No. But you know what? It was that act of not enabling me. That made me listen to wisdom later on. For they hated knowledge and chose not to fear the Lord. They rejected my advice and paid no attention when I corrected them. Therefore, they must eat the bitter fruit of living their own way, choking on their own schemes. For simpletons turn away from me to death. Fools are destroyed by their own complacency. This isn't God relishing in our hopeless situations. It's him practicing hard love. If you've ever had to do it, exercising hard love with someone you care about is difficult. But God is willing to love sacrificially to the point of enduring our anger and despising him at times for us to learn wisdom. But all who listen to me will live in peace, untroubled by fear of harm. Proverbs 2. I didn't mention that Andy spent 2 weeks going through the first 19 verses of Proverbs. And then he gave me the remaining 14 verses of Proverbs and 22 verses of Proverbs of chapter 2, the entire amount of Proverbs 2. I remember the last time Eric Siepen spoke here, he said, Andy has a neat knack of handing off the more difficult texts or lengthy texts to guest speakers. And I'm beginning to think Eric might be onto something. So, suffice that to say that Proverbs 2 gets a 30,000 foot flyover due to time constraints. But I challenge you this week to do the work of wrestling and pondering with this text, as it is loaded, loaded with treasures of wisdom. Here in the first verse, wisdom takes on the role of a mother speaking softly with her child. Her voice has changed. My child, listen to what I say and treasure my commands. Tune your ears to wisdom and concentrate on understanding. Do you know that babies begin to recognize their mother's voice in utero? In the third trimester, they become familiar with its rhythm and pitch and intonation. And right after they're born, studies show that nursing newborns will often alter their sucking patterns to hear their mother's voice more clearly. As children of God, we innately know God's voice. So the only way we don't hear him is by ignoring him. In Cruz's story, it wasn't that he didn't hear his parents calling. He heard them clearly. He ignored them. In his defense, he was still playing a game. I often hear Christians say they can't hear God. I've said it myself. But the truth is we haven't adjusted our heads so that our hearing is focused toward God rather than the world. Jesus told the story about the sheep in a pen and how multiple shepherds would bring their flocks into the same sheep pen at night. And in the morning, when it was time to take the sheep out to the fields where they would graze for the day, a shepherd would step up to the sheep gate and call his sheep. And amidst, if you've ever heard him, I lived in Australia, not the sheep capital of the world, but the second most sheep in the world. And let me tell you, sheep are noisy. And they're bleating and bawling, and it is loud. And the shepherd calls his sheep, and they respond. And they come because they know his voice. We need to learn how to position our heads to hear God, how to tune our hearing to capture what he's teaching us. How do we do that? It's the age-old answer. Spend time with the master. Listen to his voice. Hear him in the Bible, in prayer, in church, in home groups, and diligently wrestle with and ponder the text. Search for them as you would for silver and seek them like hidden treasures. Do we search for God like he's a treasure? Do we go after him like we go after things that we want? We want that car. We want that house. We're done with our old computer. We want a new one that's better, faster, more memory, bigger RAM. Heck, I want to learn AI without having to learn. I just want it to happen. But we seek those things. We save for them. Maybe we even go into debt for them. Do we pursue the treasures of wisdom and knowledge with that same type of dedication? It's a question I don't like to hear my own answer to. Wisdom will save you from evil people. Does anybody know an evil person? Thanks, Louie. Louie does. Yeah. Wisdom will save us from evil people, from whose words are twisted. A lot of word twisters around. These men turn from the right way and walk down dark paths. Listen, evil is not a creation. Evil is the perversity of good. Evil is the giving up of good willfully. Choosing to take the path that leads away from God's good creation. And it leads away from what people who take that flat path were created to be. None of us were created evil. Even though we have a sin nature. They take pleasure in doing wrong and they enjoy the twisted ways of evil. Evil people focus on extracting from others for their own pleasure. This can lead to abuse and violence. It is the way of darkness. Temptation alters the natural order of things. God's design for the world is based on harmony and mutual cooperation. The way of evil is a stranger to true reality. In verse 16, another woman arrives on the scene. She is the seductress of folly. Wisdom will save you from the immoral woman, from the seductive words of the promiscuous woman. The man who visits her is doomed, and he will never reach the paths of righteousness. This is a conversation that the author was having with his son. If you look back at commentaries, historical documents, the majority of them will say it is actually a conversation about sex outside of the covenantal relationship that God intended it. But it's about more. It's about more than that. That was the headline. But it deals with using other people for the sole purpose of indulging our own selfish appetites. It's the height of greed and exploits people and the earth, as Andy had talked about last week. More is never enough, and you will never be satisfied if you choose this path. So follow the steps of the good and stay on the paths of the righteous. But the wicked will be removed from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted. Will we choose the path of righteousness? Pray with me. Father, it is with the intent to hear you better that we adjust the positions of our spiritual heads and tune our ears to the sound of your voice during the upcoming time of confession that Ray will lead us into. We realize that our lack of listening to your direction is often wrapped up in selfishness and obstinacy because we want to go our own way but refuse to see the darkness of our path. Show us your bright way of love and justice, we ask. We ask these things in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.